Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey, everyone listening to the podcast, this is Ari Melber. And one thing I've seen in your comments and your ratings sometimes is references to liking the special extras we do. And this is one of them, a special interview that I just did sitting down with the acclaimed producer and director, Lee Daniels. He's behind The Butler, Precious, Empire on TV. And this is part of something we've mentioned to you guys a few times, but it's new because it's season two of Mavericks with Ari Melber, where we get deeper, longer, in-depth interviews with artists, musicians, cultural icons. The depth, we think, is a good fit for podcasts. Now, what you're about to hear is Daniels going through a lot of different stuff. He opened up very emotionally about his dealings with things that I think a lot of us can relate to: adversity, being told you don't belong or aren't good enough, battling addiction. He even goes into depth about the night that Halle Berry won her famous historic Oscar for Monster's Ball. He wasn't in the room. He explains why. I'll let you hear it directly from him. And this, as I mentioned, is part of Mavericks. We have a new season now. So in the coming weeks, right here on the podcast or excerpts on the show sometimes, you'll be able to see Annie Lennox, Swizz Beatz, music executives Lior Cohn and Kevin Lyles. And if you want to go back, you can see past versions of Mavericks with Chris Redd from SNL, Transparent creator Jill Soloway, and actress Chloe Grace Moretz. So Lee Daniels is coming up on this podcast, but the other ones you can always find at msnbc.com/mavericks. As always, if you do give us a rating, we appreciate it. 5 stars or whatever you think we deserve. And please feel free to leave a comment. You can tell from me mentioning that you guys like the exclusives that I do read, and we read the comments, good, bad, or in between. Now, without further ado, my special exclusive interview with Lee Daniels. Hello and welcome to Mavericks with Ari Melber. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by the one and only Lee Daniels, director, executive producer, Precious, The Butler, Empire, and obviously a whole lot more. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ari.
You're not afraid of the things that people spend a lot of time running from, whether it's in a theater or in life: pain, abuse, racism. And yeah, you are showing people things they might not want to think about.
Mm-hmm. There is humor in dark, and that there is light in dark. It is my job to find the light in the darkness and then to show it to you guys on screen. It's hard. It's very, very, it's scary sometimes because people can take it negatively. People can say that here comes Dark Lee Daniels with another wah wah. But from the very beginning, from Monster's Ball on, I thought it was important to show the African American experience, warts and all, and the beauty of it all.
In Monster's Ball, people didn't want to make that movie.
No.
How would you describe your How would you describe your funding for that movie?
Hard.
Do you make your work based on what you've been through and who you are, or what you want to show people about the rest of the world?
I think that people are, I think the entertainment industry, Hollywood for the most part, has underestimated the intelligence of the of us. It started out because I was a manager, and I could not find employment for the African American actors that I was working for, and they were just—literally, I can't believe I'm saying this in my lifetime—they were just pimps, they were just prostitutes, they were drug addicts, and those were the opportunities that were available to us as people of color. The only opportunities. Rarely was there a Julia with Diane Carroll or a doctor. Rarely was there, I mean, it wasn't. So I set out to say, okay, well, let me just figure out how to, since I can't change the system as a man, as I can't find employment for these actors as a manager, let me change it up here so I can create opportunity. So
that makes you unusual.
Yeah.
You have one job: to get these people parts. You see that there is limitation or discrimination in all of the available parts, and you say, I'm going to make more parts. I mean, most people don't even think like that.
Yeah. You don't say, this is racism. This is, you don't know it. Because I think if I knew what I knew now, I wouldn't have the courage to do. If I knew it's such an uphill battle 30 years ago, I don't know that I would be here now. I knew that I would not look at racism. I knew that I just had to change it. I knew that I wanted to see African Americans work. And it was really hard for me to watch incredible actors from, I mean, Loretta Devine is working quite a bit now, from Paula Kelly, Morgan Freeman. These are people that meant a lot to me. And it was important for them to find work that represented us all. So,
are you saying part of your professional courage came from naivete?
Yeah. I took the system. I didn't know what I was doing. I knew I wanted to direct. I couldn't go to school for directing. So there was a hustle about the world that I came from. And there was an artist that was there too. I combined them together. I became sort of depressed because I couldn't find work for the talent that I represented. And they were, I'm talking Yale graduates. These were profound thespians. And they were reduced to maids. And I said, fuck that. Let's figure something out. And literally, I said, okay, let me take control of my life, their lives, by closing my management company and producing my first film.
So with Monsters Ball, what happens when a bunch of the people in power say no to you? You take kind of off the books money and make a film that's that critically acclaimed and wins this historic Oscar. Then what happens? Do those people then accept you in the industry?
No. You would think that Lionsgate put a no tea, no shade, Lionsgate, I love you. But you would think that they would have built a fortress around me, you know, after the win of Halle Berry and the unprecedented win of Halle Berry and the nominations. But no, I was offered Who's My Baby's Mama Part 2.
After the Oscar winning.
Yeah, Leprechauns from the Hood Part 7. I didn't even know there was a 1 through 6.
Can I say something? Mm. And this is unpopular.
Do you know the show?
Leprechauns from the Hood 4 is actually underappreciated.
I haven't seen
it. Is that because powerful people don't like being proved wrong, period? Or is that because racism and sexism runs a lot of Hollywood, period?
I think that's both. I think that they couldn't figure out how I got this movie made and that it was received critically. And they were outdone that I was determined to tell this story, this interracial love story that I felt was important to tell.
Let's look at one of the scenes that people do remember.
A black man in America, you can't be like that. I try to...
I'm not sure what you want me to do.
I want you to make me feel better.
Got a lot of trouble for that. A lot of trouble for that. I was naive, you know? Like when, for me, when you're in pain, you release it through sexual activity and or through inebriation, self-inebriation. And so that was her pain, and that's how she released her pain. I think that, and I was criticized deeply. We didn't get
it. You were criticized.
I was criticized.
Was that
NAACP didn't give us any nominations at all. Meanwhile, she wins the Academy Award.
She does other things in the movie from pain, the way she treats her child.
There's no black or white in life. There's gray. It was a mixed reception in that we weren't embraced by the NAACP, that world. Yeah, we were embraced by the Academy as for the art that it was.
Does it have to be that kind of trade-off for you?
I don't care. I mean, as long as it's out there. I mean, whether or not you like it or whether you don't like it, I assume that you're not going to... I assume you're going to be offended by my work. If it's not offensive to you, then I'm not doing my job. If I'm not making you think about what's inside your head, I'm not doing my job. So I don't care about that. And I really don't care about the critical acclaim. If you go out and you start to make a movie for an Oscar, you are up Schitt's Creek. That's just, it doesn't work like that. You do it from what's inside of here, you do it what's inside of here and your experience in life.
Where were you when Halle Berry was the first black woman to win an Oscar for a lead role in that movie?
I was in a hotel. You've clearly done your homework, have you?
Yeah. I do some homework around here, yeah.
Yeah. I was in a hotel, inebriated.
Not expecting to win then? Or inebriated regardless?
Not expecting to win at all. I'm invited, but not, you know, I didn't intend on, didn't feel like I deserved to be there.
Why not? You were a part of the movie.
I don't know, because when Hollywood tells you you're not deserved, you sort of believe that. So at that time, I was on drugs.
And you were dealing with that, but her even being nominated was a credential and exciting to your team, no?
Very exciting. And we got two writing nominations, too.
What hotel?
The Chateau Marmont.
Naturally. A little on the nose, Lee.
Well, yeah, sort of.
You basically are in the Chateau Marmont. You're watching it then on TV, expecting there's a possibility she would win.
We thought that Sissy Spacek was going to win because she had been winning everything. So I just expected for her to win. And I really was I was just happy to be out in Hollywood with a winner. Mm. It's hard to get a winner. And for your first one to be a winner, and for what we went through to get that movie on its feet, to even be in the conversation, that in itself was a win for me. So I didn't think I was deserved of being at the table. So I didn't go there.
So that's something people who think of you as this successful culture creating star, frankly, might be surprised that even at that point in your career, even on Oscar night, you weren't in the room, you're, as you put it, inebriated in a hotel, and then this happens.
And the Oscar goes to Halle Berry in Monsters Ball.
This moment is so much bigger than me. It's for every nameless, faceless woman of color that now has a chance because this door tonight has been opened. I want to thank Lee Daniels, our producer. Thank you for giving me this chance, for believing that I could do it. And now tonight, I have this.
That's nice. That, I hadn't seen that in forever. I hadn't, I think I saw it since that time and since the Chateau Marmont.
This is the first time you've seen it since that night. How does it look now?
It looks great. It makes me feel like I was just naive. And stupid for not going. Yeah.
What brings the tears?
It was a hard fight. A really hard fight.
And
she deserved it. Yeah, she deserved it. It was that's the first time I've seen that.
She deserved it, but you didn't think.
I deserved it. No, I didn't think I deserved it. I was just doing another day. I'm trying to think about where my next gig is at, where my next gig is coming from. And how I could change the world with the next piece of work that I could do. Something that was unexpected. So she's there. I'm in the bed with a crack pipe and thinking, okay, so what's next for me? How do I change the world with the next piece of work that I want to create?
How do you feel remembering that she thought you did deserve it and she thanks you from that stage?
You know, Oprah told me something a long time ago that I just, I'm just now starting to embrace, and that reminds me to do that. She says, when people say thank you and that you are great, take it in. And, so you just don't have time to take it in. You don't have time. You know, life's so short that you just, okay, thank you, you know? And you don't really stop and take it in. And this time I took it in. So that's why I became emotional. You'll never see me cry on television again, that's for sure.
Yeah?
Mm-mm. Well, it's been a long time.
A lot of other people cry in your work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why is it important to show people crying? Why is it important, if I may, in your work to show black people crying?
Because that's what we do. We cry. We also laugh, too. And I show that, too. But I think that I think it's important, whether it's black or whether you're white, to show the human condition. And I think it's so stifled often with some of this bullshit TV and film mess that I see. I'm not impressed by much.
You don't watch the final cut of your work after it's done. Why not?
Because it's why. You know, I've done it. I know either it's good or it is good most of the time. It is good. Once my friends have criticized and beat me into a pulp of what their thoughts are, and I've sort of collaborated with whomever it is, I'm good. I don't need to see it.
If the audience doesn't emote, are you not doing your job?
They always emote. Yeah, even if they're cringing, they're emoting. And I get off on that. I really get off on that. I mean, I think that is probably that's my ego right there. Mm. Like if I'm not pushing your buttons, and I'm not, I watch your face, watch the screen, I know that I'm not doing my job as a filmmaker, as an artist. I'm about to do Billie Holiday right now, and I haven't, as I told you, I haven't worked since The Butler on a film. And so I don't know I don't know what to expect. I know I've got some incredible actors, and...
Why Billie Holiday?
I've tackled issues that have been personal. All of them have been very personal experiences, and I haven't really tackled my sobriety yet. You know, I haven't really tackled the... what it's like to live in sober. It's very uncomfortable being sober, and yet it's really great, but it's an uncomfortableness. It's an uncomfortableness that...
You feel something positive even amidst the difficulty
doing
it.
Yeah, I feel good, I look good, my headspace is great, but there's this uncomfortableness. Mm-hmm. And now with you, there's an uncomfortableness.
Right here. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Uncomfortable. Yeah, it's
is
one
it
day at a time.
Because I'm staring at you?
It could be. No, it's just that uncomfortable.
It's
living sober.
Yeah.
And people need to understand that.
I think Billie Holiday was either sexually fluid or bisexual and living as a black artist.
Yep.
And
at a time. I can't imagine living at a black artist as a black artist in a time where that... I can't imagine it. I mean, I know what it's like living as a black artist now. I know what it's like living as a black artist 30 years ago, you know?
And
I can't even imagine what she went through.
And as you just put it, dealing with challenges in sobriety?
She didn't care, you know? She didn't care about what people thought. And she did it her way. So there's with that uncomfortableness comes a force of nature that I see a lot in myself, of her, you know, not taking no for an answer. Even this movie right here has not been, you know, no studio one. You would think after all of the success that I've had with the film that it would be, that I could get this film financed by a studio. And that has not been the case. I've got studio movies, but it's what they want to do.
What they want to do.
Yeah, what they want to do. Action, you know, what'd you call it? A superhero, you know. Yeah, but it's not the gems. It's not the pearls. It's not the diamonds that are in the rough that changes lives, I think.
And you laid out everything Billie Holiday lived through, mm-hmm. and still made work that wasn't just beloved, but challenged racism in America, violence
right
in America.
Right in the eye. And I've learned that, I swear, I didn't know what I know now. I mean, like, I can say that there's racism now and wholeheartedly, you know, look you in the eyes and say, hey, man, this country's messed up. I didn't know that when I was young. I wouldn't have been able to dream, you know, if I had really believed that there were people that hated me just because of who it was that I am. I don't know. I'd probably still be back in the ghetto someplace.
Hmm.
Or in jail, or dead. I dreamed big, and I thought the best in people. I always thought that people were good people. Yeah.
I have a couple lines from Strange Fruit. Mm. I'd love for you to read them. They're
okay.
Right here.
pastoral scene of the gallant South, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia sweet and fresh, then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Ouch. Ice, baby. Dum, 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 dum.
Oof. Stop, collaborate, and listen. What is she mixing there? The pain, the murder, the genocide, with something that she says is sweet and fresh. What does that mean to you?
It's what my work is about. We thought that the government wanted her down because she was using drugs. That was just an excuse. They wanted her to stop singing that song because it was dividing the country apart. And not only African Americans, but white Americans saw the truth and the power in that song.
What does it mean to you that Black Americans can make art that will move part of white America, that will open up this conversation, but then the powers that be and other white Americans, if we're looking at it through a racial lens, say no, then that art has to be put down, delegitimized, marginalized, in some case, criminalized.
Mm-hmm.
And do you see any echoes of that interplay with Billie Holiday's era to now?
Yeah, which is the reason why I'm doing it. I think that things have not changed at all. It's interesting, you know. It gets all convoluted because what happens is that there is a lot of white guilt going on too. But that's liberal white guilt. So what's happening now is that a lot of non-talented people are getting away with mediocrity because of white guilt.
In Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. And also in literature and in art.
And that is?
Bullshit.
Explain.
Just that. Yeah, I think that your work should speak for itself. Not because you're Black, you deserve, you know, oh, look at me, this work is incredible, but your work should speak for itself. So I'm no different than any white artist or any Puerto Rican or any Asian. My work should affect you for what it is.
Do you think Hollywood has become, quote unquote, politically correct now?
So politically correct that I want to run away from it. I was woke before woke was even a word.
Some people say you're woke AF.
I'm so woke I want to go to sleep. I do.
I got one more clip for you. Precious for a lot of people wasn't just a movie.
Mm-hmm.
It was like sitting down and going through something. When's the last time you watched it back?
I haven't.
Okay. So let's take a look.
Love ain't done nothing for me. Love beat me. Raped me. Call me an animal. Make me feel worthless. Make me sick.
That wasn't love, Precious. Your baby loves you. I love you. Right.
What I remember about that was really pushing the actors to almost a nervous breakdown getting those performances.
Nervous breakdown.
We were all three having a nervous, the three of us were having a nervous breakdown. I didn't leave until we got it. It was hard. It was hard. Truth is hard to tell. It's hard to hear. It's hard to execute.
And did you think people would be scared to tell their friends to go see this thing?
Again, somewhere I guess deep in my mind, I guess I gotta have a hit. But I don't think of it like that. I think of it as long as I'm telling something that I know will affect people, that I made a difference in the world.
I'm going to read you one critical review. Uh-huh. We've talked a lot about the love and the celebration, the inspiration. Oh, your whole body language has changed.
Yeah, let's hear it.
And I understand.
I don't read those either,
I understand,
by the way.
You don't read reviews.
No. I read a review once. I literally was in the bed with the covers, with the down quilt over my head for 2 days.
Oh no.
Oh yeah. It only takes one word. So go ahead, hit me with it.
Well, Lee,
I'm sober now, so go ahead.
The Washington Post, one of the leading publications in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
The prankishness of Lee Daniels, the butler, undermines the serious statements this star-spangled film is striving to make about race, class, and politics. Viewers may be forgiven for wondering whether Lee Daniels, the butler, might have been titled Lee Daniels, Forrest Gump. Its hero, challenged morally rather than mentally, but watching history in a Gumpian fashion as a series of cameos viewed through a slightly clueless daze.
Okay. I bet you that reviewer cried his eyes out or her eyes out and said, damn, that Lee Daniels. You know, that's what I think. And that's what makes me an artist. I mean, you're going to either love it or you're going to hate it.
At this stage,
I've had people running out of theaters at Precious. Literally,
I
running,
bet. I can
running
only imagine.
Out of the theater. That shit, I can't watch that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or they're not ready in their life to even.
They don't want
to
watch it.
Access it for two
Garbage.
Hours. Have you changed the way you deal with conflict and business disputes, or what in the street is sometimes called beef, over the course of your career? Or are you basically handling it the same way you always have? Because you're a lot bigger now and you have more people coming for you sometimes.
I think, one, I'm old.
You don't look old.
I'm 60. So, you know, and again, I hate to bring it up, I'm sober.
Yeah.
So there's a whole different way of looking at things. And three, I'm wiser. I mean, I didn't have the regular path that any other filmmaker had, or the opportunities that any other filmmaker had. So I had to do what I had to do to get my cinema to be seen. And sometimes there were things that I'm embarrassed about that I had to do to get done what I had to get done. And I mean, that's part of my journey. And my kids are proud of me. They're really proud of me. And that's all that matters at the end of the day.
Lightning round. This is the easy part. Favorite project you've worked on?
The Paperboy.
Favorite movie in the world?
Norman, Is That You?
What's that?
Movie starring Red Fox and Pearl Bailey about an interracial, their son who is gay, and he's going with a white man, and it was done in the 70s, and it was just way before its time.
Being underrated means?
Being underrated means being normal.
Being overrated means?
Being overrated is bullshit.
Being successful in Hollywood requires?
Belief in yourself.
Someone you haven't worked with that you want to?
I want to work with Paula Kelly, and I want to work with Morgan Freeman. Those are the two of my favorite actors that I would be honored to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Terrence Howard.
A wonderful man. Incredible actor. A kind soul.
Robin Williams.
Someone that I love. Someone that I love. Love.
Mariah Carey.
Someone that I love.
Someone you mentioned earlier, Oprah.
Someone that I love.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump, that's an easy one. You know what, can I tell you something? I met him. I met
when?
Him. I interviewed for him to do a biopic of him for Lifetime.
Get out of here.
Swear to God. Sat in his office. Was mesmerized by him.
Trump Tower.
I don't know where I was, I guess.
Well, his office.
Yeah,
what year?
It was like right after Monsters Ball, so I don't know, a couple years after that.
Was it one-on-one?
One-on-one. One-on-one.
Who's interviewing who?
We were both interviewing each other. And then I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I was sort of impressed by him. And then it wasn't until he became on The Apprentice, I was like, I don't think I like this guy so much. He was so charismatic in the meeting.
And you were going to direct a film about him.
Yeah, he never wanted me to, which is fine by me.
What did he want out of you in the meeting?
Clearly not for me to direct his movie, because I kept prodding with questions, and I was sort of taken aback by his charisma. Then,
what was the most charismatic thing he did in the meeting that you remember?
I'm obsessed with your work. He went fawned over me, just fawned over me. I was in him. I was like, wow.
Was it knowledgeable fawning?
Yes. Okay. He had done his homework, or someone done it for him.
Right.
And so I was a fly in a trap. But then I saw how he was acting on The Apprentice, and I said, I don't think I like this guy so much.
And what do you think of him now?
I loathe him. Is that a bad thing to say? But I loathe him more than he tricked me. I'm pretty good for being a mind reader and knowing what people are like.
Do you think he's tricking other people now?
I think he thinks he's tricking other people. Everybody's on to him.
And you think he'll win again?
If we don't do something, yes, I do. Radical. We are at war with ourselves. This is a time that I didn't foresee in my life that I would be, I think I'd be a part of, but I think that we're at a civil war in our country.
What's left for Lee Daniels?
I'm excited about finding new artists, developing them, looking at a kid that is intimidated about the whole process and say, it's okay, you got talent, let's figure it out.
Failure means?
Failure means what you think it means. I mean, failure is in your head.
Success means?
Success means personal happiness.
Being a maverick means?
Doing it your own way and being unafraid. You know, if you're unafraid, you're in a good place.
Lee Daniels, you've been generous with your time and your honesty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.